Well, GBB listeners will probably be quite familiar with that whole setup and that song. It's the intro to a show that's on Saturday nights at 7:30, hosted by Engineer Joe. That's why I always call him. Full name, Joe Salzone, the youngest political talk show pundit around, as far as anyone can tell, and up-and-coming and burgeoning personality on the radio and talk scene. Hello, Joe.
Hey, hey, Dave. It's, you know, it's strange to hear that on a Sunday night.
Yeah.
It is.
So
I'm used to hearing it on Saturdays, not Sundays.
So, of course, the first thing that comes to mind is, how did you get into radio, and also how did you get such a conservative, right-wing, kind of Hitler-esque bent?
I didn't know about Hitler-esque.
Well, it's an anti-fascism song. It's nice to hear, you know, at the beginning of your show. That's
right.
Pretty interesting.
Right.
But,
well, a couple of years ago, I just recently celebrated my second year in radio back in November. I read an article a couple of years ago, and it basically said that of registered voters, I think 12% who are teenagers would go out and vote, and that kind of ticked me off, because I've always been fascinated by politics. I've always watched the news since I was a very young guy, and I just, you know, I realized, you know, I have this ability to talk. You know, I like talking, I like debating with people, and I was offered a job at a radio station. It was a music station, but it was a chance to get my point of view across, albeit limited. My hands were tied in what I could say, but it was after my first broadcast, November 28, 2000, right in the middle of that heated election in 2000.
Yeah.
I realized after I went off the air, this is what I want to do, and I've done it since.
And have you found that when people hear your attitude and your viewpoints, I mean, do you take a lot of guff for it, because most of the people around here in Long Island and New York are liberal and democratic, or do you just get a lot of the people of the great wider country who buy Rush Limbaugh's books and watch Hannity and Combs and all that stuff?
The thing about my show is that I would say about 60% of my audience is liberal. So a majority of the people who listen to me won't agree with me either way. I was bothered when I first started on radio. I was bothered by the fact that people would send me really, really cruel emails, and eventually just realized that people aren't always going to agree with you. So I've learned to deal with it. I laugh it off now. I do find myself in a position in New York, which is, you know, two of one of the most liberal states in all the country. California would be the first. I do take a lot of guff from people. Sometimes I'll laugh it off or pass it off as jealousy or envious. You know, there's a lot of envy and there's a lot of hatred towards me because I'm 18 and I've been able in 2 years to accomplish a lot in radio. I laugh it off. I don't pay attention to the critics anymore.
And also, one of the things that I do like is that you stress that you will listen on your show to all viewpoints. You do a lot of interviews. I assume you occasionally do some call-in, too.
Right.
And although you have a very specific conservative Republican agenda, you do say that you will listen to all viewpoints.
Yeah, I don't believe my side is completely right. We have some faults on our side. Every side has their faults. But every side has an argument, has a point of view, and I want to hear everyone. And I want my audience to make a decision for themselves, not based on what I say, but based on what everyone says.
Well, have you ever either been swayed to someone else's opinion, or have you ever been able to sway a Democrat or a liberal to your side?
I have swayed a couple of my friends who were hardcore, you know, Clinton supporters to my side. I don't try to convince anyone to one ideology or another. I don't like that game, and I try not to play it. What I do is I give people my side of the story and then the other side. There's always two sides of the story. We were taught that at a young age. And, again, I want people to hear all the viewpoints. That's the great thing about talk radio, is that you still have the freedom to express your viewpoint without being cut off by the censors.
Right.
And make a decision for yourselves.
Well, okay, getting specifically to some of your viewpoints. I mean, we're a few weeks after the elections now, and the Republicans just kind of swept the country. I mean, I personally feel that it was more of a state-by-state thing. People voted individually in the states for the people that they preferred, rather than this whole massive Republican-esque sweep. But it added up to a sweep and a sweep, ultimately,
right,
and taking Congress back and all that.
Right.
Why do you think the Republicans just, why did it happen that way?
Well, because the Democrats, they don't have a message anymore. They spent all their time, you know what it was? I think Americans see that there's just one party. There's the Republican Party, and then there's Republican Light, which is the Democrats.
Yeah.
You know, there is no decisiveness anymore. The Democrats have lost their identity. Isn't it
big government versus small government still? Or?
That's the basis. That's the concrete way of debating. It's, you know, Republicans, we stand for small government, low taxes. Democrats want to raise your taxes and want, you know, government intruding on your daily lives on a much wider scale. They just ignored it. Plus, Homeland Security was a huge issue this year with this election, and Republicans have always been seen as being very strong on national defense. Liberal Democrats are seen as being anti-war,
right,
and I guess in some ways anti-American, unpatriotic. Right. I don't agree with that. I personally believe, first of all, I was wrong in my predictions. I thought the Democrats would take back, or would keep the Senate, and would probably take back the Congress. I was wrong on that one. Thankfully, I was wrong. I think every pundit, with the exception of one from CNN, was wrong.
And they all figured it would go in a Democratic way. I was figuring that, too. But maybe you can explain this to me. This is what I don't understand. In the Clinton years, and God knows the conservatives and Republicans despised Clinton because he lied under oath and all that sort of stuff. But I seem to remember that the biggest thing for about a year and a half in his entire administration, the thing that everybody was worried about, was, did he sleep with Monica? Yes, of course he slept with her. You know, did he lie about it? Why did he lie about it? All this, is he going to be impeached? He's not going to be impeached. And that's all the country was really worrying about, because the economy was pretty good. It was just before the dot-com thing really started to crash.
Right.
And things were going pretty well, except for that, which the Republicans were kind of trumping up into this major issue. Fine. Over the past year and a half of the Bush administration, we've been worried about dying. We've been worried about terrorism, of fear. It's been this horrible bunch of months ahead of us that may not be directly the Republican administration's fault. Maybe it is. But why is everybody suddenly flocking to Republicans and thinking they're doing such a wonderful job when it's been horrors since Bush has been in office? Why?
Well, first of all, I disagree with you that this did not start with Bush. We've seen Al-Qaeda back in the early 90s when Clinton came into office. On three separate occasions, Bill Clinton had a chance to bring in and prosecute Osama bin Laden and chose not to, which, in my mind, ultimately led to 9/11. You can't place blame on 9/11 on anyone. The people we blame are those 19 terrorists who went aboard those four aircraft and forever changed the lives of thousands upon thousands of people in New York and Washington and that field in Pennsylvania.
Well, of course, yes.
There have been people on my side who have said, you know, Bill Clinton, he caused it, he should be blamed, he should be tried for murder. No, he shouldn't be, because it was not his fault. Just like it was not Bush's fault.
Or Bush's dad's fault, necessarily,
You know, if you want to go back, you can look at Carter and his failures with foreign
policy. Well, Carter was a failure. There's no question about that.
You know, if you want to place the blame, we can go back to Washington. He was our first president. You know, we fought that war. Remember that? That was pretty much the first terrorism act on our country. I'm exaggerating a little, but it makes my point that you can't place blame on 9/11 on any one individual. It's the fault of bin Laden and those 19 hijackers and Al-Qaeda and the Taliban.
Well,
and all
what I'm saying is that everybody seems to think that George Bush is doing such a fabulous job as far as this whole terrorism thing. And I'm trying to figure out, what has he done? When it first happened, he said, Osama bin Laden is public enemy number one. That's the guy we've got to get. Okay, we're still getting audio tapes from Osama bin Laden, who is somewhere. And like 2 weeks after the attacks, Osama bin Laden was no longer that important suddenly to me. It was not about him anymore. Why? Because we couldn't get him. So what is Bush doing that is so wonderful, aside from curtailing certain civil and libertarian rights in this country, for the sake of assumedly stopping terrorism?
Well, you have to admit, first of all, the war in Afghanistan went on. It was a tremendous war with little planning, with little strategy. We outed the Taliban in a matter of weeks. I think the similar thing would happen in Iraq if we eventually go in there. And by the time...
Should we go in Iraq?
Yes.
Because...
We have no choice anymore. for 4 years. Saddam Hussein has had 4 years now to do whatever he wants to with these weapons of mass destruction. We know he has chemical weapons. We know he has biological weapons. And we damn well know that if he has a nuclear weapon, he would use it against us and our allies, Israel.
Well, if he hasn't, let me ask you, if he has a nuclear weapon, if he has it,
yeah.
Why hasn't he used it?
Because I don't think he has one yet. But I do think he has, first of all, he's getting the materials. We know that. It's so obvious that he is. And it's so obvious that he wants it. But no, I don't think he has one. But we know, we saw it in the 80s, we saw it when he invaded Kuwait, when he attacked the Kurds, when he attacked his own people, mm-hmm. that he would use gas on mothers and children and anyone who gets in his way.
Well, I mean, the United States used Agent Orange on its own soldiers, to, or tested black people way back when with chemicals.
I'm not saying America's perfect. We're not. I mean, we had slavery for crying out loud. But, Saddam Hussein is a ruthless, evil dictator.
And I'm not contesting that,
right.
By the way. And I'm not even I should say that a lot of times I play, to some extent, devil's advocate, because no one more than me would like to see an anti-Semite, a murderer and a killer and a bastard like Saddam Hussein gone. I'm just kind of wondering about the consequences and the timing and all that. If we had gone in 2 months after the World Trade Center attacks and gotten Iraq then, I don't think anybody would have any question about, should we be doing this?
Well, because a lot of people do not see a connection between Al-Qaeda and Iraq. There is a connection. We know.
Oh, come on. Two months after the bombings, people would just say, kill every Arab. I mean, every Arab country was sort of being, any Islamic militant from everywhere. I mean, they're all over the place.
There's a connection between Iraq and 9/11. You know, somebody.
But is there a connection between Saudi Arabia, our quote unquote friend?
I think Saudi government, who, by the way, those terrorists that they support, they only do that because they know that if they don't, those terrorists will overthrow that Saudi government in a day. That'll be a.
Yeah, but isn't that the time for the United States to then come in and buck up the Saudi government if they're supposedly our friends? That's an excuse.
They're not our friends. They're not, and they're cozy with the Bush administration. That makes me very uncomfortable, because I think if Bush wants to be hard on terror, he would tell the Saudi government, either you stop supporting terror, or we're going to, kick your ass next.
Why isn't Georgie doing that?
Because of oil. You're telling,
you're saying this.
I admit it. It's obvious. It's open. It's there. It's in the media. Yes, it's oil. It's all about oil.
Well, isn't that hypocritical just a teeny-weeny bit?
No.
Why? Why not?
Because if we overthrow Saddam Hussein, which I believe, if we go to a war in Iraq, it'll be a week. It'll be a simple war to kick Saddam out. We'd have to stay there, of course, just to stabilize a new government, just like we've done
and understand that the terrorism repercussions would be for months after that all over the world.
This war on terror is going to last forever. It's a war between good and evil, and the rhetoric that the Republicans, and some Democrats, by the way, John Edward of North Carolina, saying how, we're not going to stop until all terrorism is ended. It ain't going to happen. We live in a world where evil is a part of our daily lives. We see it every day. You turn on the news and you see someone get shot, a mother beats up a child. You see it all the time.
Yeah, I try to include a little bit of evil on my show every week,
right.
to offset that corrosive goodness.
Yeah, but in a world where there's so much bad and evil, you can't lose sight of the fact that there's a lot of good too, and the media does not see that because it's not profitable, it's not marketable. You can't make money off of a good story.
Well, I don't think that's true at all. I mean, Hollywood movies have happy endings. I mean, what's the reason?
I'm talking about if you turn on the local news. And the top story is not going to be a baby found after a month of being missing. It'll be
baby missing,
a baby missing,
dead, baby found in garbage.
Or a mother, takes her 3 or 4 year old daughter in the back of a minivan in the parking lot, and Sears
and smacks her.
And smacks her around.
Yeah,
that'll be the top story.
And do you think that is what? Is that a misperception? Is that hypocrisy, or is that just the way things are? Is that goodness isn't necessarily a sniper in Washington, D.C. is more important than, a lot of shopkeepers doing well during the holiday season in Washington, D.C.
It's not that it's more important. It's that more people are captivated by stories of violence and torture and mayhem. The DC Sniper is a very good example of that. Not a lot of people would want to sit around and watch stories of mothers, you know, giving milk to their children, and you know, all's good.
I watched that, you know, depending on
Kumbaya.
The...
Yeah,
she was cute. No.
They just, you know, we don't want to see that.
Okay, well, I mean, Touched by an Angel has been a successful TV show for
that's
a decade. I mean, there is an audience
there
for
is.
If that's done well.
That's it. I mean, the station has some good quality, you know, old-fashioned family programming, which is slowly dying in this country because we're focusing now on sex and violence and blood and lust. You see it on these stupid, goofy teen shows on Channel 11 and 9.
Well, are you going to blame that on liberals and Democrats,
no.
too, or is that just
no.
what people watch?
It's a shift in our society. I do think it is the fact that liberal policy in this country has contributed to a generation of sissies. You know, there have been stories...
Sissies, dude?
Yeah, you can't play tag in schools anymore because a child's feeling might get hurt if they lose. That's insane.
Wow.
That is insane.
That is insane.
That
although,
is,
you know, I remember being picked second to last in, like, pretty much every sport in school.
So was I. It didn't hurt my feelings.
Then you're doing out of a hat, you know?
I'm a bad athlete. I don't hide it.
Yeah, and gym was a fairly miserable experience half the time for half the kids
right.
in school.
And it's, you know, one thing that I will never like about a liberal, and I don't want to generalize, but this is a majority of them, and I have a lot of liberal friends. They are so touchy-feely, and I hate that.
You mean physically touchy-feely, or they're just
well,
what? They're like...
Well, Clinton was physically touchy-feely.
Well, yeah.
you know, they're so, you know, look, well, let's talk it out. You know, like Columbine, when those two kids shot up 13, 14 people.
Right. I don't think they were liberals.
They had emotional problems. They might have been abused.
And their fathers had
child.
Guns.
You know, in my eye, they are evil, psychotic people who... lost their mind and shot people and I hope are burning in hell.
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, that's...
But liberals, they want to make excuses for people. They don't want to hold people accountable for their actions. They want to hold other people. It's never... I'll use Al Gore as an example. He lost in 2000. It wasn't his fault. No, it was the voters' fault. Or it was his campaign workers' fault. It was, that Florida government, that's corrupt there. It's not his fault. It's not his fault that he's
I do agree with your whole bent of people taking responsibility for their own actions and leaving people who, when you see someone is responsible for something, not letting them off the hook by saying, oh, it's this and this and this. I do think you're overgeneralizing about liberals and Democrats by saying that they only feel that way, when in fact the idea is to get at root causes of certain things like poverty or whatever it is, or crime, and to say, you know, if we change this over a long period of time, if we change the class structure of the country, if we change the opportunities that people have, well, then maybe we won't have this crime factor. It isn't so much of, let's not blame him, it's let's try and change the system so that they have more opportunities to do other things. I mean, that is, I guess, a smarter democratic liberal viewpoint or whatever it is.
Well, I guess you would be the new Democrat, the centrist, not the liberal.
I never consider myself a liberal except in artistic and matters like that. And that's where I come down very... I mean, you're a radio guy.
Right.
And you should feel free to say what you want to say.
And I do, and I'm happy that, and we live in a country where you're able to speak your mind.
Well, if you were pro... Heaven forbid, but if you were pro... Al-Qaeda, if you were sort of anti-American, but not to the point of treason, do you think you should be allowed to vent your views? Do you think Donald Rumsfeld should okay that?
It depends on the circumstance, and I'll tell you why. We're living in a different time now. We're living in a war time. Not many of us will see this again.
I hope.
So do I. I don't want to, I don't want to wake up and see another 9/11. I do think in a time of war... you have to give up some of your rights in order to protect yourself. I said it after 9/11. I got into a lot of trouble with a lot of people by saying on air, and I got a lot of phone calls about this, that in a time of war, I am more than willing to give up some of my civil liberties and my rights to protect myself and my family from another 9/11.
For how long?
Until we're safe again. And it may never be again.
But who decides what rights you give up?
I don't think it should be the government, because that would be big government. And like I said in the beginning, I don't want big government at all.
So individuals should be able to determine for themselves what rights they give up?
I think so. I think if a person decides that they want to give up some of their rights, they should.
It should be like a voluntary rights system. People fill out a card that they give back to the government. I voluntarily give up the right to say the F word on the air. That's mine. You know,
I would be more than willing to give up that word.
Well, whatever. But I'm just saying. But the guy next door, he doesn't want to give up his right to own a firearm.
And he has a right to do that. You know, again, we live in a country where you do have the ability to speak your mind, no matter how idiotic your position is or how unreasonable and how unrealistic it is. I don't think disagreeing with the president makes you un-American. I don't like that generalization. I think, if anything, dissent is what America is about. It's about debate. It's about, you know, I think someone once said to me, debating the issues keeps America strong.
But isn't that a liberal Democrat thing?
No.
And the Republicans,
that's
just,
common
they don't
sense.
Debate and then they go and do.
That's a common sense thing. That's a lesson in life. That's not a political lesson. That's a life lesson.
Well, one life lesson to take from this conversation is you've got to listen on Saturday nights at 7:30 to Joe Salzone Live. I want to thank him for being my special guest on this Dave's Gone By.
Well, thanks a lot, Dave. It was a lot of fun.
Great fun talking to you. I hope actually we do this again. I think we definitely have lots to talk about.
We'll have to.
Excellent. Thanks.